Gallery Podcast.
This is the National Gallery Podcast, and I'm Miranda Hinckley. In this month's episode, writer and broadcaster Gus Casely-Hayford takes us on a tour of a new website that puts the nation's art online. And we take a timely look at one of the gallery's most autumnal scenes, Rubens's A View of Hechtstein. But we start with news of an upcoming exhibition. No, not Leonardo, although with opening day just around the corner on the 9th of November, you might want to buy your tickets if you're hoping to visit in the first few weeks. We're going to look further ahead now, with a sneak preview of next year's first big show. It's called Turner Inspired, In the Light of Claude. And to tell me about it, Colin Wiggins took me to one of the smallest galleries in the building, Room 15. Just four paintings hang there, two by Turner and two by Claude.
Claude in the 18th and 19th centuries was fashionable beyond belief, which is why the National Gallery has got such a world-beating collection of these paintings. And most of them were here from the very early days of the gallery's foundation. He was known as the Raphael of landscape painting, a kind of sacred cow, if you like, from the history of art. And that's what makes one of our forthcoming exhibitions very exciting, because we're putting Turner and Claude along alongside one another, exactly as is in this room. We've got the two 17th century paintings by Claude, and then we've got these two paintings that, in contrast to Claude's beautiful, serene, classical, balanced, harmonious, restful compositions, are kind of violent, off-key, aggressive, in-your-face. But the most interesting thing about this room is that the two Turners hang here as a result of one of the terms of Turner's will. When he died in 1851, one of the key terms of the will was that these two pictures should be left to the National Gallery and be hung alongside these two paintings by Claude Lorrain. Now, let's just put that in a little bit of contemporary context. Lucian Freud died the other week. And let's just imagine the opening of his will, and he leaves two big paintings to the National Gallery on condition that they are hung alongside, let's say, Titian and Rubens. I mean, can you imagine the outcry? Can you just imagine what people would say about Lucian Freud for doing that? And the Turner doing this in 1851, it's arrogance beyond belief. But what I think he's doing, what he's trying to say, is that, all right, Claude, I love you, or I loved you, I learnt from you, but actually, I'm better. It's a kind of collision. Turner is actually taking Claude Lorrain on. It's Turner being, I think, extremely provocative. Superficially, there's a lot in common, but the more you start to think about what Turner's doing, the more you find it to be an aggressive attack on the values of traditional landscape painting.
Well, it certainly sounds like that's going to be challenging to viewers as well, kind of confronted with these two great artists who are so very different.
Well, I hope that's what the viewers do, that the viewers see it as not a spot the difference or a comparison, that they see it as Turner actually going in there with all guns blazing and trying to stake a claim for his own greatness alongside the greatness of Claude, which I think Turner is trying to tell us that he's superseding.
Thanks to Colin Wiggins. If you want to see Turner's take on Claude, you haven't got long to wait. Turner Inspired, In the Light of Claude, opens next March. We'll have more news early in the new year. And Colin will be back next month to tell us about 2012's other big shows at the gallery, including the latest on a unique multidisciplinary collaboration inspired by masterpieces by Titian, that will culminate not only in an exhibition, but also a series of new ballets to be performed at the Royal Opera House. The UK holds one of the world's greatest public art collections in its galleries and civic buildings, nearly 200,000 paintings in all. For many years, the Public Catalogue Foundation has worked to make these pictures accessible in a series of printed books. But now, thanks to the BBC, the project's come right up to date with the launch of a new website. Your paintings already hold digital images of 77,000 publicly owned works, and the aim is to capture all 200,000 in time. Cathy Fitzgerald went to meet writer and broadcaster Gus Casely-Hayford to find out more.
I think the wonderful thing about this collection is that it's scattered amongst such a variety of buildings, from fire stations to town halls, but also in some of our great galleries. The unfortunate side of that is that 200,000 is such a big number that they can't all be on display at the same time. And so only a fifth of those paintings are available for us to see. There just isn't the resource to put all of these works on display. I mean, 200,000, you can imagine the wall space, you can imagine the conservation issues as well in keeping that many works available to be seen. But what this project allows is for us to have greater access to this, what is a public collection of paintings, and one of the great public collections of paintings in the world.
And originally it was the brainchild of the Public Catalogue Foundation, that's right, isn't it?
That's right, and the Public Catalogue Foundation, that they've been the pioneers in this, and that they have, over the years, really held the flame up for public access to these works. And wonderfully, the BBC have now come on board to help to broaden the access to this work, and they've done so digitally. And I mean, for most of us who run around with mobile phones that have access to the internet, that we have all sorts of ways that we can get online. And now we just have a way just to bring a little sparkle of magic to our days, because you can just dip into this incredible collection of work, which is yours, that's the thing, it's yours. And you can now have the kind of privileged access that only a limited number of curators and people who work in museums, conservationists, would usually have.
And what will people find if they go to the website?
What I love about this website is it isn't just a huge archive of these images, which would be fantastic in itself, but there are lots of ways into, lots of different avenues into this work. That there are a number of people who, figures in the arts and culture, who have created their own choices. So you can wander with them through this public collection and get from them a sense of what these works mean to these figures, which is, it's glorious. It's like having a friend take you round their own private gallery.
And the BBC website is called Your Paintings, isn't it?
Yes, the BBC website's Your Paintings. And I really do feel that this is a project that comes to life when you wander around and you get the sense that this public collection really is yours. We are so lucky to have this work available to us. And what this digital project actually does is it underlines the fact that we have the freedom to curate it, to enjoy it in whatever way we please. It's just how a public collection should be used. So if you get the chance, please do have a look, because it really is worthwhile and very uplifting as well.
Gus Casely-Hayford. If you want to take up his invitation, visit www.bbc.co.uk/yourpaintings. You can browse the nation's collection or take an online tour with a celeb. Among the guides, you'll find Monty Don on the art of gardening, Frank Skinner on religious paintings, and Mary Beard on myth. Not to mention Gus himself, talking about outsider art. And if you'd like to get involved, the site's also looking for people to help tag the collection. And finally, the leaves are changing colour, the nights are drawing in, and there's a sharp chill in the air. It's autumn. But rather than mourn the loss of summer, we're celebrating the season as we visit one of the gallery's best-loved landscapes. It's an autumnal view painted some 370 years ago by the great Flemish master Peter Paul Rubens. Leah Caribbean met Jackie Ansell from the gallery's education team to find out more.
Jackie, we're standing in front of Rubens, a view of Hechtstein in the early morning, and it's a big picture, some 7.5 feet across. And with it, Rubens places us up on high ground overlooking this wonderfully expansive landscape below. What is it that we can see inside it?
Well, from the golden glow of the sunrise, your eyes sweeps round to the town of Malines and the distance that rises up. And in the foreground, you can see the hustle and bustle of people setting off to market. We've got a woman on the cart, probably with some milk and a tethered calf. And then we've got in the foreground a hunter and his prey, the partridge. And then on the right-hand side, you've got a field full of cows, and you've got two women milking the cows, just giving us an idea of the energy that goes into making this a productive landscape. And there are some tiny details. There's a lady picking mushrooms in the shadow of the tree, and there's a man fishing as well.
And what about the Hechtsteyn of the title? What's that?
That's the stone house that you can see glistening there with its windows lit up by the early morning sun. And of course, just even having glass in your windows was a great mark of wealth and prestige at this time. It's got a tall tower, and its gables show us the characteristic sort of style that gives this stone house its real grandeur.
So this was the house that Rubens had bought. Is that right?
It is. And I suppose just as important, or even more importantly, he bought the title that went with it. He was Lord of the Manor of Hechtsteyn.
And in buying this country estate, is he retiring? This is quite late on in his career, isn't it? He's in his late 50s.
Yes, and it is to some extent an active retirement. He does still work. So this was a house that complemented his townhouse, and as befits his status, he would want somewhere where he could retire and be reflective and engage in what he said was his sweetest of professions, the painting that he loved. But he is looking forward to, I think, a very happy time with his new, young, lovely wife. His first wife died 10 years before, but he's married now to Helen of Fourmont, a 16-year-old, who's producing children for him, of course.
And is it a case that we can actually see them in the picture?
Yes, just to the left in the middle ground, you can see a rather fine-looking gentleman in a plumed hat and red breeches, and we think that's actually Rubens himself. Next to him, his wife, and next to them, the baby, on the lap of a wet nurse, which, of course, would be usual for rich people at that time.
There's something so lovely about this landscape, as if he really feels fond of the whole thing, that he wants to embrace the whole thing. Does that ring true for you?
Yes, I think so. Your eye really wants to linger over every detail. And the enjoyment, I think, is expressed not only on the surface of the panel, but also on the idea that if you turn the panel around, you'll see that it's made up of many panels. Because as he started to paint the central section, he found he really wanted to continue. And he expanded it and expanded it as he went on.
So how many panels are there in all, do you think?
I think there were about 17 panels, and it wasn't unusual for him to increase a work once he'd already started on it. But there is this suggestion that he enjoyed it so much he almost got carried away, and you can see it as a reflection of the love invested in not only the building but also the landscape and the idea of being an artist creating that landscape.
This is an autumnal landscape, very clearly, but should we be looking at an autumnal landscape as something equivalent to him thinking about his old age? I mean, he's 59 now. He's also not well as well, isn't he?
There's no evidence to suggest that this is specifically a landscape in that vein, but I think you can't help but see this as almost a sort of an elegiac piece. It's very peaceful, it's very calm, it's panoramic, you've got this wonderful aerial perspective, and it makes me think of the seasons of mists and mellow fruitfulness to come. And, of course, it was painted retrospectively, as we know, so close to the end of his life, when he's suffering from gout, he's finding it difficult to paint. It's not surprising to see it in those terms then, is it? As something that shows really a delight, not only in painting, but in painting scenes that meant something to him. It's a very personal landscape, I think.
Thanks to Jackie Ansell. If you'd like to see Rubens' painting for yourself, come along to the National Gallery. A view of Hechtsteyn in the early morning is on display in Room 29, and we're open 10 till 6 every day and 10 till 9 on Fridays. Next month, we'll hear from curator Luke Sison as Leonardo da Vinci, painter at the Court of Milan, finally opens its doors. You can buy tickets in advance at the gallery or online with a booking fee at www.nationalgallery.org.uk. That's it for this episode. Until next time, goodbye.